immune to most of the magics that allow us to live among humans undetected. I stared at him. I'm not immune to magic. I didn't say you were, he answered. But some of our magics pass you by. Why do you think you stood against Marsilia's rage when the rest of us fell? It was a sheep. It wasn't the sheep. Once upon a time, Mercedes, what you are would have been your death sentence. We killed your kind wherever we found them, and they returned the favor. He smiled at me, and my blood ran chill at the expression in those cool, cool eyes. There are vampires everywhere, Mercedes, and you are the only walker here. I'd always thought of Stefan as my friend. Even in the heart of the vampire seed, I hadn't questioned his friendship, not really. Stupid me. I can drive myself home, I told him. He returned his gaze to the street in front of him and laughed softly as he pulled the van over. He got out and left it running. I loosened my grip on Samuel's shoulder and forced myself away from the safety of the back bench seat. I didn't see Stefan or smell him when I got out of the van and moved to the driver's seat, but I could feel his eyes on my back. I started to drive off, then pulled my foot off the gas and stomped on the brakes. I rolled down the window and spoke to the darkness. I know you don't live there. You smell of wood smoke and popcorn. Do you need a ride home? He laughed. I jumped, then jumped again when he leaned in the window and patted my shoulder.
Go home, Mercy, he said,
and was gone. For real, this time. I chugged along behind semis and Suburbans and thought about what I'd just learned. I knew that vampires, like the Fae and werewolves and their kindred, were all old-world preternatural creatures. They'd come over for the same reasons most humans did. To gain wealth, power, or land, and to escape persecution. During the Renaissance, vampires had been an open secret. Being thought one added power and prestige. The cities of Italy and France became havens for them. Even so, their numbers were not great. Like werewolves, humans who would become vampires died more often than they accomplished their goal. Most of the princes and nobles believed to be vampires were just clever men who saw the claim as a way to discourage rivals. The church saw it differently. When the Spanish invasion of the New World filled the coffers of the church so they no longer had to depend upon the favor of the nobles, they went after the vampires as well as any other preternatural creature they could find. Hundreds of people died, if not thousands, accused of vampirism, witchcraft, or lycanthropy. Only a small percentage of those who died actually were vampires, but those losses were still severe. Humans, lucky for them, breed much faster than the undead. So vampires came to the New World, victims of religious persecution like the Quakers and the Puritans, only different. Werewolves and their moon-called kindred came to find new territory to hunt. The Fae came to escape the cold iron of the Industrial Revolution, which followed them anyway. Together, these immigrants destroyed most of the preternatural creatures who had lived in the Americas, until at last even the bare stories of their existence were mostly gone. My people, apparently, among them. As I took the on-ramp onto the highway to Richland, I remembered something my mother once told me. She hadn't known my father very well. In my mostly empty jewelry box was a silver belt buckle he'd won in a rodeo and given her. She told me his eyes were the color of sunlit root beer, and that he snored if he slept on his back. The only other thing I knew about him was that if someone had found his wrecked truck sooner, he might have lived. The wreck hadn't killed him outright. Something sharp had sliced open a big vein, and he bled to death. There was a noise from the back of the van. I jerked the rearview mirror around until I could see the back seat. Samuel's eyes were open, and he was shaking violently. Stefan hadn't told me what the bad reaction to the kiss might be, but I was pretty sure I was about to find out. I was already passing the exit for Columbia Park, but I managed to take it without getting rear-ended. I drove until I came to a small parking lot next to a maintenance shed. I parked, killed the lights, then slipped between the seats of the van and approached Samuel cautiously. "Sam," I said,
and for a heartbeat, his struggles slowed down. His eyes gleamed in the shadows of the van's depths. I smelled adrenaline, terror, sweat, and blood. I had to fight not to flee. Part of me knew that so much fear must have a cause. The rest of me figured out why some werewolves had a bad reaction to the vampire's kiss. Waking up, unable to move, his last memory being something sucking his blood, was bound to hit every panic button in a werewolf's arsenal. "Shh," I said, crouching in the space between the second seat and the sliding door. "The vampires are gone. What you are feeling is something they can do with their bite. It makes their victims passive so they can feed without drawing attention. It's wearing off now. Stefan said it will leave no ill effects." He was beginning to listen to me. I could see it in the softening of his shoulders. Then my cell phone rang. I answered it, but the sudden noise had been too much. The van bumped and bobbed as Samuel scrambled over the back seat and into the luggage space behind the seat. "Hey," I said, keeping my voice soft.
"Mercy."
It was Warren, his voice urgent.
"You need to come here as soon as you can, and bring Samuel."
Samuel was making harsh noises behind the seat. Changing was painful for the wolves at the best of times, when they are comfortable and eager to hunt. Changing when the air is thick with fear and blood would not be good. Not good at all. "Samuel is indisposed," I said, as he screamed a roar of agony and despair. He was fighting the change. Warren swore.
"Tell me this, then. Is Adam afraid someone in the pack betrayed him?"
"That's my fault," I said. "Warren, is the pack coming to your house?" He grunted. I assumed it was a yes. "Tell Adam."
"I made steaks and fed him about an hour ago, and he's sleeping it off. I tried to wake him up before I called, but he shut down hard in a healing sleep. I don't know what it would take to wake him up."
"Dr. Cornick would," I muttered, wincing at the noises Sam was making in the back of the van. "But he's not available to come to the phone right now."
"It's all right, Mercy." He sounded suddenly calm. "I'll take care of it. If that's Samuel in the middle of an involuntary change, you need to get away from there and give him time to calm down."
"What, and leave Samuel to go hunting in the middle of Kennewick? I don't think so."
"He won't know you, not if he's changing like that. It won't be Samuel Brand's son. It will be only the wolf."
The sounds behind the seat were becoming more canid and less human.
"Mercy, get out of there."
"It's all right, Warren," I said, hoping I was right. Wolves, the real wolves, are not usually vicious animals unless they are frightened, hurt, or cornered. Werewolves are always vicious, always ready for the kill. "If this doesn't work, tell him the vampires got me," I said. "I don't think he'll remember. It'll be true enough. The vampires are what forced this change. You tell him that." I hung up the phone. It was already too late to run, but I wouldn't have anyway. Leave Samuel to deal with the aftermath of his wolf's rampage? Samuel was a healer, a defender of the weak. I wasn't certain that he would live with innocent blood on his hands. I deserted him once a long time ago. I wouldn't do it again. The sounds died down until all I could hear was the harsh panting of his breath. But I could smell his rage. I didn't bother undressing before I shifted. It would have taken too long. When Samuel's white head appeared over the top of the seat, I was backing out of my t-shirt and bra. I stopped what I was doing and crouched on the floor of the van, tail tucked between my legs. I didn't look up, but I felt the springs give way as he climbed slowly over the back and stood on the seat. I was so scared, it was hard to breathe. I knew what I had to do next. But I wasn't certain I could manage it. If some part of me weren't absolutely convinced that Sam, my Sam, could never hurt me, I wouldn't have been able to do the next part. He was utterly silent. In Montana, on a hunt, the wolves howl and cry, but in the city, all hunting is done soundlessly. Growls, whines, and barks are all bluffing tools. It is the quiet wolf that will kill you. With Samuel perched silently on the back seat, I rolled over onto my back and exposed my belly to his jaws. I stretched my chin so that my neck was vulnerable to him as well. It was one of the hardest things I'd ever done. It wasn't as if he couldn't kill me as easily if I were lying on my belly, but there was something worse about exposing my unprotected underside. Being submissive is a bitch.
The van dipped again as he jumped down, landing almost on top of me. I could smell his anger. The sour smell of his fear had faded all away with his humanity, leaving only the wolf. Hot breath moved my fur as he sniffed his way upward, his nose parting my hair as he went. Slowly, the anger faded, along with the intensity that had allowed me to know what he was feeling. I tilted my head and risked a glance. Samuel filled the space between the short bench seat and the sliding door. Caught beneath him, one front paw on either side of my shoulders, I felt a sudden claustrophobia and instinctively tried to roll over. I stopped the movement as soon as it began, but Samuel lunged forward with a warning growl and a snap of teeth in my face. I tried to take comfort from the growl, since theoretically if he was growling, he wasn't likely to kill me, but I was too aware of the volatile nature of the werewolves. He moved suddenly, closing his mouth over my throat, but too wide for a jugular strike. I could feel his teeth through the fur on my neck, but they stopped as soon as they touched my skin. I prayed then that Bran was right, and Samuel's wolf looked upon me as his mate. If he was wrong, then both Samuel and I would pay the price. I held very still as my heart tried desperately to pound its way out of my ribcage. He released me, nipped gently at my nose, then slipped soundlessly away. I rolled to my feet and shook my fur to resettle it, shedding my bra at last. Samuel was stretched along the back seat, watching me with his beautiful white eyes. He blinked at me once, then resettled his muzzle on his front paws and closed his eyes, saying as clearly as he could without words that the two halves of his soul were together again. I heard the quiet purr of a big engine coming down the park road. I shifted to human as quickly as I could and began scrambling for clothes. My underwear was pale green, and I found them first. The sports bra went on easier than it had come off, and I found my T-shirt when my foot touched it. The car slowed as it approached, its headlights glinting through the window of my van. "Pants, pants, pants," I chanted as I brushed my hands over the floor. My fingers found them as tires crunched gravel and the car parked behind us. They also found Z's dagger. I shoved it under the rubber mat near the side of the van farthest from the sliding door. Feverishly, I jerked my pants up, zipped and buttoned them as the driver's side door of the other car opened. Shoes. Luckily, they were white, and I snatched them up and pulled them on over my bare feet without untying them. I gave the hulking brute stretched across the full length of the van's back seat a frantic look. Samuel wouldn't be able to change back for a while yet, probably a few hours. A forced change takes time to recover from, even for a wolf of Samuel's power, and it was too late to try to hide him. "You're a good dog, Samuel," I told him sternly. "Don't scare the nice police officer. We don't have time to be escorted down to the station house." A flashlight found me, and I waved, then slowly opened the sliding door. "Jogging officer," I said. The flashlight kept me from picking out a face. There was a long pause.
"It's 1 in the morning, ma'am."
"I couldn't sleep." I gave him an apologetic smile.
"Jogging alone at night isn't safe, ma'am."
He lowered the flashlight, and I blinked rapidly, hoping the residual after-images would fade soon. "That's why I always take him," I said and jerked a thumb toward the back of the van. The policeman swore.
"Sorry, ma'am. That's just the biggest damn dog I've ever seen, and I grew up with St. Bernards."
"Don't ask me what he is," I said, sliding through the door so I stood beside the policeman rather than below him. "I got him from the pound when he was a puppy. My vet says he might be an Irish wolfhound cross of some sort, maybe with something with a little wolf, like a husky or a samoyed."
"Or Siberian tiger," he muttered, not intending me to hear.
In a louder voice, he said,
"Why don't you let me see your license, registration, and insurance, ma'am?"
He was relaxed now, not expecting trouble. I opened the front passenger door and retrieved my purse from the jockey box where I tucked it when we'd stopped at Uncle Mike's, right next to the registration, insurance cards, and my cig. Life would be much easier if the nice police officer didn't see that, or the 444 Marlin in the far back. I had a concealed carry permit, but I'd rather keep this low-key, especially since, according to Stefan, Z's dagger was not legal. I gathered the insurance card and registration, then shut the jockey box, gingerly, so the cig didn't rattle. I needn't have worried. When I looked for him, the police officer was sitting on the floor of the van, petting Samuel. Any other werewolf of my acquaintance I'd have been worried about. They aren't pets, and some of them resent being treated like one.
Samuel canted his face so that the policeman's fingers found just the right spot behind his ear and groaned with pleasure.
Samuel liked humans. I remember him coming down to play with the elementary school kids, all human, at recess. Most werewolves avoid children, but not Samuel. They all knew who he was, of course, and when they saw him as a man, they called him Dr. Cornick and treated him as they would have treated any other adult. But when he came to school as a wolf, they put him to work playing pony, runaway dog, and ferocious but loyal wolf friend. He did it with the same fierce enjoyment as the children.
"He's beautiful," the policeman said, getting out of the van at last and taking my paperwork. "How big is he when he's standing up?"
I clicked my fingers. "Samuel, come." He stood up on the bench seat, and the top of his back brushed the roof of the van. Then he stretched and hopped off the seat and onto the gravel road without touching the floor of the van. He deliberately moved like a big dog, a little clumsy and slow. His thick winter coat and the night provided some camouflage of the differences that no amount of mixed breeding could account for. Werewolves' front legs are built more like a bear's or a lion's than a timber wolf's. Like the former two, werewolves use their claws to rip and tear flesh, and that means their musculature is different too. The policeman whistled and walked around him. He was careful to keep the flashlight out of Samuel's eyes.
"Look at you," he murmured. "Not an ounce of fat and every bit of 200 pounds.
"You think so? I've never weighed him," I said. "I know he's heavier than I am, and that's good enough for me."
The policeman gave me back my license and assorted papers without actually looking at any of them.
"I'd still be happier if you ran in the daylight, ma'am. In any case, this park is closed at night. Safer for everyone."
"I appreciate your concern for my safety," I said earnestly, patting the werewolf lightly on the head.
The police officer moved his car, but he waited while I closed Samuel back into the van and followed me out of the park as far as the on-ramp to the highway, so I couldn't stop to put my socks on. I hate going barefoot in leather tennis shoes.
Samuel levered his bulk up on the front passenger seat and stuck his head out the window, flattening his ears against the tear of the wind.
"Stop that," I chided him. "Keep all your body parts in the van."
He ignored me and opened his mouth, letting his tongue get swept back like his ears. After a while, he pulled his head in and grinned at me.
"I've always wanted to do that," I confessed. "Maybe when this is all over, you can drive and I'll stick my head out the window."
He turned toward me and let his front paws rest on the floor between our seats. Then he stuck his nose in my midriff and whined.
"Stop that!" I shrieked and slapped his muzzle. "That's just rude!"
He pulled his head back and gave me a quizzical look. I took the opportunity to glance at my speedometer and make sure I wasn't speeding.
"You're going to cause a wreck, Samuel Llewellyn Cornick. Just you keep your nose out of my business."
He snorted and put one paw on my knee, patted it twice, then stuck his nose in my belly button again. He was quicker than my slap this time, withdrawing all the way back onto his seat.
"My tattoo?" I asked, and he yipped, a very bassy yip.
Just below my navel, I had a paw print. He must have seen it while I was scrambling into my clothes. I have a couple on my arms, too.
"Karen, my college roommate, was an art major. She earned her spending money giving people tattoos. I helped her pass her chemistry class, and she offered to give me one for free."
I'd spent the previous 2 years living with my mother and pretending to be perfect, afraid that if I weren't, I'd lose my place in my second home as abruptly as I had the first. It would never have occurred to me to do something as outrageous as getting a tattoo. My mother still blames Karen for my switching my major from engineering to history, which makes her directly responsible for my current occupation, fixing old cars. My mother is probably right, but I'm much happier as I am than I would have been as a mechanical engineer.
She handed me a book of tattoos that she had done, and about halfway through was a guy who'd had wolf tracks tattooed across his back from one hip to the opposite shoulder. I wanted something smaller, so we settled on a single paw print.
My mother and her family had known what I was, but they'd asked no questions, and I'd hidden my coyote self from them, becoming someone who fit their lives better. It had been my own choice. Coyotes are very adaptable. I remember staring at the man's back, and understanding that although I must hide from everyone else,
I could not hide from myself anymore. So I had Karen put the tattoo on the center of my body, where I could protect my secret, and it could keep me whole. I'd finally started to enjoy being who I was, instead of wishing that I were a werewolf or human so I'd fit in better. "It's a coyote paw print," I said firmly. "Not a wolf's." He grinned at me and stuck his head out the window again. This time, his shoulders followed. "You're gonna fall out," I told him. Chapter 12. "The pack is coming," I told Samuel as we cruised slowly by Warren's house for a look-see. "I don't know how much you remember from while you were changing, but Warren called for help. Adam was sleeping and couldn't be woken up. With Samuel safe, I could worry about Adam." "Is that normal?" Samuel nodded, and I felt a wave of relief. Clearing my throat, I continued. "Since we can't trust the pack, I think Warren is going to try to keep them away from Adam, which would be fine, except that Daryl is Adam's second, which meant a fight." Samuel told me once that despite all the physical benefits they gain, the average lifespan of a werewolf from his first change until his death is 10 years. People, like my old friend Dr. Wallace, who had to be eliminated within their first year, accounted for some of that. But most werewolves died in dominance fights with other wolves. I didn't want Warren, or even Daryl, to die tonight. And if one of them did, it would be my fault. Without my flash of intuition or paranoia that there was something wrong with the pack, Warren wouldn't have been trying to keep Daryl away from Adam. Richland was quiet, but both sides of the street on Warren's block were solid with parked cars. I recognized Daryl's 67 Mustang as I passed it. The pack was already here. I parked a block away and jogged back with Samuel at my side. A woman stood under the porch overhang in front of Warren's door. Her black hair was pulled back into a waist-length ponytail. She folded her sleekly muscled arms and widened her stance when she saw me. She was a chemistry teacher at Richland High, and Daryl's mate. "Arielle," I said, climbing up the stairs until I shared the porch with her. She frowned at me. "I told him that you wouldn't do anything to hurt Adam, and he believed me. I told him you would not act against the pack. You have some explanations to give." As Daryl's mate, Arielle ranked high in the pack. Normally I'd have discussed the matter with her politely, but I needed to get past her and into Warren's home before someone got hurt. "Fine," I said, "but I need to explain myself to Daryl, not you, and not right now." "Daryl is busy," she said, not buying my argument. I'd noticed before that teaching classrooms of teenagers made Arielle hard to bluff. I opened my mouth to try again when she said, "We keep the silence." Wolves have little magic, as most people think of it. Sometimes there will be one, like Charles, who has a gift, but for the most part they are limited to the change itself and a few magics that allow them to stay hidden. One of those is silence. I glanced around and saw four people, doubtless there were others if I cared to look, standing unobtrusively around Warren's duplex, their eyes closed and their mouths moving in the chant that brought silence upon all that stood within their circle. It was to keep the battle inside from disturbing anyone. It meant that the fight had already begun. The pack would not willingly break the silence and let me through. "This fight is without merit," I told her urgently. "There is no need for it." Her eyes widened. "There is every need, Mercy. Daryl is second, and Warren defies him. It cannot go without answer. You can talk after he is through disciplining that one." Her mobile brows drew together as she stared at Samuel. In a completely different voice, she asked, "Who is that? There were strange wolves dead at Adam's house." "This is Samuel," I said, impatiently starting up the stairs. "I'm going in." She'd started forward to intercept me, then hesitated as she took in Samuel's unusual coloration. "Samuel who?" she asked. Twice a year, the Alphas met with Bran in Bran's corporate headquarters in Colorado. They sometimes brought their seconds or thirds, but never the women. Part of that was practicality. Alphas are uncomfortable outside their own territory, and they interact badly with other Alphas. With their mates beside them, all of that discomfort and territorialism had a greater tendency to turn toward violence. That meant Arielle had never met Samuel, but she'd heard of him. White wolves named Samuel are not very common. "This is Dr. Samuel Cornick," I told her firmly. "Let us through. I've got information about the people who attacked Adam." I was tired and worried about Warren and Daryl. Otherwise, I wouldn't have made such an obvious misstep. I doubt she heard anything except my command. She wasn't stupid. She knew I was not Adam's mate, no matter that he'd claim me before the pack. I was not werewolf, not pack, not her dominant, and she could not listen to me and keep her place. All hesitation left her manner, and she closed with me. I was a fair bit taller than she, but it didn't slow her down. She was a werewolf, and when she put her hands on my shoulders and pushed, I stumbled back 3 or 4 steps. "You are not in charge here," she said in a voice I'm certain worked very well in her classrooms. She tried to push me again. Her mistake. She was a lot stronger than I, but she didn't have any experience in fighting in human shape. I moved aside, letting her momentum do most of my work. I helped her fall down the stairs with only a gentle push to keep her off balance and make her lose control of her landing. She landed hard on the sidewalk, hitting her head on a stair. I didn't wait around to make sure she was all right. It would take a lot more than a header down the stairs to slow a werewolf down much. The wolf closest to me started to move, but had to stop because it would have ruined the spell of silence. The door wasn't locked, so I opened it. Samuel brushed past me. The sound of Aurelie's enraged snarl sent me scrambling in after him. Warren's living room was a mess of scattered books and bits of broken furniture, but both Warren and Daryl were in human form. It told me that Daryl was still trying to keep the fight from being a fight to the death, and so was Warren. Werewolves in human form might be very strong, but they weren't half as deadly as the wolf. Warren took one of his dining room chairs and broke it over Daryl's face. The sound of the blow was absorbed by the pack's spell casting, so I could only judge the force by the size of the pieces the chair broke into and by the spraying blood. In a move so quick my eyes couldn't quite catch it, Daryl had Warren on the ground with a lock on his throat. Samuel darted in and closed his mouth over Daryl's wrist, then danced back out of reach. The unexpectedness of it, Daryl hadn't heard us come in, loosened Daryl's hold, and Warren broke out of it, scrambling away to get some room. That meant Samuel could take up a position between both of them. Warren, breathing hard, sagged against a wall and wiped blood out of his eyes. Daryl had taken 2 swift steps forward before he recognized Samuel and almost fell over backward to keep from touching him, an expression of absolute astonishment on his face. As soon as I was certain neither Daryl nor Warren was going to continue the fight, I tapped Samuel on the shoulder to get his attention. When he looked at me, I pointed to my mouth and ears. There wasn't a chance in hell that the werewolves outside would listen to me and stop their chanting, and we all needed to talk. I expected Samuel to go outside, but he did something else. His power rushed through the house with the force of a firestorm after some idiot opens a door to let oxygen into a room that has been smoldering for hours. The air filled with him, with his scent and power. It popped and crackled until I felt as though I was breathing the sparklers that children play with on the 4th of July. Discharges of power sparked on my skin until it felt raw, loosening my control of my extremities. I fell helplessly to my knees. My vision began to sparkle too. Black swirls and bright snapping lights made me drop my head on my knees as I fought to keep conscious.
"Enough, Samuel," said a voice I dimly recognized as Adam's. "I think you made your point, whatever it was."
I left my head on my knees. If Adam was here, everything else could wait until I caught my breath. Footsteps came down the stairs with the light, quick movements I associated with Adam. He had been doing some rapid healing. I raised my head too soon and had to put it back down. Adam rested his hand on the top of my head, then moved away.
"What was this about?" he asked. "We've been looking for you for 2 days, Adam."
Daryl's voice sounded a little distorted.
"All we had was a message on Elizaveta Arkadyevna's answering machine that she told us was from Mercy, and your wrecked house with 3 dead werewolves that no one could put names to. You, Jesse, and Mercy were all missing. We've been watching your house, but it was sheer dumb luck that one of the pack saw Mercy riding around with Kyle earlier. When I called Warren, He wouldn't admit you were here, but he didn't say you weren't either, so I called the pack and came over.
I looked up again, and this time the world didn't spin. Daryl and Warren were both kneeling on the floor, near where they'd been fighting when I'd last seen them. I saw the reason for the odd enunciation problem Daryl was having. A nasty cut on his lip was visibly healing.
"I couldn't lie to Daryl," explained Warren. "You were in a healing sleep, and I couldn't wake you up. I couldn't let any of the pack up there while you were vulnerable."
Samuel sat beside me and licked my face, whining softly.
"Ish," I said, thrusting him away. "That's just gross. Stop it, Samuel. Didn't Bran teach you any manners at all?"
It was a deliberate distraction, designed to give us all a chance to decide how to handle the situation without more bloodshed.
"Warren was acting under my orders," said Adam slowly. "I see," said Daryl, his face becoming carefully expressionless. "Not against you."
Adam waved his hand at chest height. "Don't feel hurt," the gesture said. "It wasn't personal."
"Then who?"
"We don't know," I told him. "There was just something that bothered me."
"Tell them what happened that night," Adam said.
So I did. To my surprise, when I told them that I'd had a bad feeling about calling in the pack, Daryl just nodded, saying,
"How did they know where Adam lived, or when the meeting was over? How did they know he didn't have an army at his house like some of the Alphas do? Jessie's not stupid. When she heard the sound of the Trank guns firing, she wouldn't have screamed, but they knew where she was anyway."
I thought about that. "There was just the one human they sent up after her, and he went right to her room." Daryl made a sweeping gesture.
"I'm not saying that there are not explanations other than a betrayal by one of the pack, but you made the right choice."
It shouldn't have made me feel good, but I'm as much a sucker for a pat on the back as the next woman.
"Go on, Mercy," said Adam.
So I continued the explanation as succinctly as possible, which meant I left out any details that weren't their business, such as my past relationship with Samuel. The rest of the pack filtered in while I talked, taking up seating on the floor, moving broken furniture out of the way as necessary. It wasn't the whole pack, but there were 10 or 15 of them. Aurieli sat next to Daryl, her knee just brushing his. She had a nasty bruise on her forehead, and I wondered if she would continue to treat me with the cool courtesy she'd always extended to me, or if she, like the females in Bran's pack, would consider me an enemy from now on. Warren, I thought, with Adam's support, had just cemented his place in the pack, at least with Daryl, whose body language told the rest of the pack that Warren was not in disgrace. Daryl valued loyalty, I thought, suddenly certain it wasn't Daryl who had betrayed Adam. Who, then? I looked out over the faces, some familiar, some less so, but Adam was a good alpha, and other than Daryl, there were no wolves dominant enough to be alphas themselves. I got to our decision to bring Adam to Warren's, saying only that we thought it would be a better hiding place than his house or mine, and stopped because Daryl was all but vibrating with his need to ask questions.
"Why did they take Jessie?"
he asked as soon as I quit speaking.
"Warren tells me there haven't been any ransom calls," Adam said.
He'd begun pacing sometime during my story. I couldn't see any sign he'd ever been hurt, but I suspect some of that was acting. An alpha never admits weakness in front of the pack.
"I've been thinking about it, but I honestly don't know. One of the wolves who came to my house was someone I once knew, 30 years ago. We were both turned at the same time. His experience was harrowing, because he changed without help."
I saw several of the wolves wince.
"He might bear a grudge because of it, but 30 years is a long time to wait if revenge is the only reason for taking Jessie."
"Does he belong to a pack?" Mary Jo asked from the back of the room. Mary Jo was a firefighter with the Kennewick FD. She was small, tough-looking, and complained a lot because she had to pretend to be weaker than all the men on her team. I liked her. Adam shook his head.
"David is a lone wolf by choice. He doesn't like werewolves."
"You said they had humans with them, and new wolves," Warren said.
Adam nodded, but I was still thinking about the lone wolf. What was a man who had been a lone wolf for 30 years doing running in a pack of new wolves? Had he changed them himself? Or were they victims like Mac had been?
Samuel laid his muzzle on my knee, and I petted him absently.
You said they use silver nitrate, DMSO, and ketamine, said Aurelie, the chemistry teacher. Does that mean they have a doctor working for them? Or maybe a drug pusher? Ketamine isn't as common as meth or crack, but we see it in the high school now and then.
I straightened up. A doctor or a vet, I said. Beside me, Samuel stiffened. I looked at him.
A vet would have access to all of those, wouldn't he, Samuel?
Samuel growled at me. He didn't like what I was thinking.
Where are you going with this? Asked Adam, looking at Samuel, though he was talking to me.
Dr. Wallace, I said.
Carter is in trouble because he can't accept being a werewolf, Mercy. It is too violent for him, and he'd rather die than be what we are. Are you trying to say that he is involved in a plot where young wolves are held in cages while experiments are performed upon them? Have you ever heard what he has to say about the animal experimentation in the cosmetics industry?
For a moment, I was surprised Adam knew so much about Dr. Wallace. But I knew from the reactions of the people in Aspen Creek that Adam had spent time there. I suppose it only made sense that he would know about Dr. Wallace's troubles. From the murmurs around us, the rest of the pack didn't, though.
Adam stopped arguing with me to explain to everyone who Dr. Wallace was. It gave me time to think.
Look, I said when he'd finished, all these chemicals for the drug they shot you with are readily available, but who would think to combine them, and why? Who would want to be able to tranquilize a werewolf? Dr. Wallace is in danger of losing control. I saw it myself this week. He is worried about his family. He wouldn't have developed a way to administer drugs to werewolves in order to kidnap Jesse, but he might have developed a tranquilizer for people to use on him, in case he lost all control and his wolf attacked someone.
Maybe, Adam said slowly. I'll call Bran tomorrow and have him ask Dr. Wallace about it. No one can lie to Bran.
So what do they stand to gain with Jesse? Daryl asked. Money seems ridiculous at this point. It seems that this attack was directed at the Columbia Basin Pax Alpha rather than at Adam Hauptman, businessman.
Agreed. Adam frowned at him. Possibly someone wants control of the pack? There isn't much I would not do for my daughter.
Control of the pack? Or control of Adam, I wondered. And is there a difference between the two?
Whoever it is, and whatever they want, we should know before dawn. We know where they are staying, I said, reaching into the pocket of my jeans and pulling out the paper the vampires had given me and handing it to Adam. Z's informant said that our enemies paid the vampires almost $10,000 to leave them alone while they were here, I told Adam.
Adam's eyebrows shot up, even though he clutched the paper with white fingers.
$10,000 is way too much, he said. I wonder why they did that.
He glanced at the paper and looked around the room.
Daryl, Warren, are you up to another adventure tonight?
Nothing's broken, Daryl said.
Not anymore, agreed Warren. I'm up for it. Samuel?
The white wolf grinned at him.
We can take my van, I offered.
Thank you, said Adam, but you are staying here.
I raised my chin and he patted my cheek, the patronizing bastard. He laughed at my expression, not like he was making fun of me, but like he was really enjoying something. Me.
You are not expendable, Mercedes, and you are not up to facing a pack war.
By the time he'd finished speaking, the smile had left his face, and he was watching the people in the room.
Listen, buddy, I said. I killed two werewolves. That makes my kill sheet as high as yours this week, and I didn't do so badly getting that address from the vampires either.
You? Got the address from the vampires,
said Adam in a dangerously soft voice.
Patronizing bastard, I muttered, driving my van through the empty streets of East Kennewick. I am not Pack. He does not have the right to tell me what to do or how to do it. He has no right to yell at me for talking to vampires. He is not my keeper.
He was, I'd finally had to concede, right about how little help I'd be in a fight with another pack of werewolves. Warren had promised to call me when they were through. I yawned and realized I'd been up for nearly 20 hours, and I'd spent that last night tossing on a strange motel bed, alternately dreaming of Mac dying because of something I hadn't done, and of Jesse alone and crying for help.
I pulled into my driveway and didn't bother parking the van in its usual place, safe in the pole-built garage. I'd clean out the wrappers and the socks in the morning and put it away. Z's dagger, which I'd put back on before I left Warren's to make certain I didn't just leave it in the van, got tangled in my seatbelt. I was so tired, I was in tears by the time I finally was free. Or maybe I was crying like the kid who gets picked last for the softball team at school and is told to go somewhere and not get in the way while the rest of them played ball. I remembered to get the guns out of the van and to grab my purse. As I started up my steps, I realized that Elizaveta Arkadyevna hadn't gotten around to cleaning the porch yet, because I could still smell Mac and the distinctive scents that accompany death. No, I decided, my lips peeling back from my teeth in a snarl. I was crying because I wanted to be in on the kill. These people had come into my territory and hurt people I cared about. It was my duty, my right, to punish them. As if I could do anything against a pack of werewolves. I brought my hand down on the safety rail and snapped the dry wood as easily as if it had been resting on cinder blocks at the dojo. A small, soft presence rubbed against my ankles and welcomed me with a demanding mew. "Hey, Medea," I said, wiping my eyes before I picked her up and tucked her under the arm that wasn't holding my guns. I unlocked my door, not bothering with the light. I put the guns away. I set my cell phone in its charger beside the regular phone, then curled up on the couch with a purring Medea and fell asleep, waiting for Warren's call. The sun in my eyes woke me up. For the first few moments, I couldn't remember what I was doing sleeping on the couch. The clock on my DVD player read 9 a.m., which meant it was 10 in the morning. I never reset it to account for daylight savings. I checked my messages in my cell phone. There was a call from Z asking me to check in, but that was it. I called Z back and left a message on his machine. I called Adam's home phone, his cell phone, and his pager. Then I called Warren's home number, too. I looked Daryl's phone number up in the phone book and called him, writing down the other numbers his machine purred at me. But he wasn't answering his cell phone either. After a moment of thought, I turned the TV onto the local station, but there were no emergency broadcasts. No one had reported the bloodbath in West Richland last night. Maybe no one had found the bodies yet. I took my cell, got in the rabbit, and drove to the address the vampires had given me. I might have given Adam the paper, but I remembered the address. The house was completely empty, with a for sale sign on the front lawn. I could smell the pack faintly around the perimeter of the building, but there was no sign of blood or violence. If the address had been false, where was everyone? I drove to my shop before I remembered it was Thanksgiving, and no one would be bringing in cars for me to fix. Still, it was better than sitting home and wondering what had happened. I opened one of the big garage doors and started to work on my current project. It was difficult getting anything done. I'd had to take off my phone so I didn't break it while I was working, and I kept thinking I heard it ring. But no one called, not even my mother. An unfamiliar car drove up and stopped out front, and a tiny woman dressed in red sweats and white tennis shoes got out. She met my gaze, nodded once, and, having acquired a target lock, walked briskly over to me. "I am Silvia Sandoval," she said, extending her hand. "You don't want to shake my hands just now," I said with a professional smile. "I'm Mercedes Thompson. What can I do for you?"
"You already have."
She put her hand down and nodded back at her car, a been-there-done-that Buick that was, despite rust spots and a ding on the right front fender, spotlessly clean.
"Since your Mr. Adelbertsmeiter fixed it, it has been running like new. I would like to know how much I owe you, please. Mr. Adelbertsmeiter indicated that you might be interested in exchanging my son's labor for your time and trouble."
I found a clean rag and began rubbing the worst of the grease off my hands to give myself time to think. I liked it that she had taken time to learn Z's name. It wasn't the easiest name to wrap your lips around, especially if your first language was Spanish. "You must be Tony's friend," I said. "I haven't had time to look at the bill Z prepared, but I am short-handed. Does your son know anything about fixing cars?"
"He can change the oil and rotate the tires," she said. "He will learn the rest. He is a hard worker and learns fast."
Like Z, I found myself admiring her forthright, determined manner. I nodded. All right, why don't we do this? Have your son come...
When? I had no idea what I was going to be doing for the next couple of days.
Monday, after school. He can work off the repairs, and, if we suit, he can keep the job. After school, and Saturday all day.
His school comes first, she said.
I nodded. I can live with that. We'll see how it works.
Thank you, she said. He'll be here.
I watched her get into her car and reflected that Bran was lucky she wasn't a werewolf, or he might find himself having trouble keeping his place as alpha. I paused and stared at my dirty hands. Last night, someone had asked me what the kidnappers wanted. They didn't need Adam's place in the pack, not if they had their own pack. If they wanted money, surely there were easier targets than the Alpha's daughter. So there was something special about Adam. Among the werewolves, it is a matter of safety always to know where you rank in the pack. In the hierarchy of the Marak, it was not so important, as long as everyone remembered that Bran was on top. But people kept track anyway. I had a very clear memory of my foster father crouching in front of my chair and naming off names on my fingers when I was 4 or 5. One is Bran, he said, 2 is Charles, and 3 is Samuel. 4 is Adam of the Los Alamos pack. 5 is Everett of the Houston pack. One is Bran, I said now. 2 is Charles, and 3 Samuel, both Bran's sons. 4 is Adam, now of the Columbia Basin pack. If there was something special about Adam, it was that, other than Bran's sons, he was the nearest challenger for the title of Marak. I tried to dismiss it at first. If I wanted to get Adam to fight Bran, I certainly wouldn't start by kidnapping his daughter. But maybe they hadn't. I sat down in the bug's driver's seat, and the old vinyl cracked under me. What if they had come to talk to Adam rather than attack him? I closed my eyes. Suppose it was someone who knew Adam well, like his old army buddy. Adam had a hot temper, explosive even, although he could be persuaded to listen once he'd calmed down again. Given that the enemy was a werewolf, he would be afraid of Adam, or at least cautious. That's the way the dominance game works. Meeting an alpha on his home territory puts him in a superior position. Can't take a gun loaded with silver ammunition because that would be a declaration of war. He'd have to kill Adam, or die himself. Suppose this enemy had on hand a drug, something to calm a werewolf down, something to keep Adam from killing him if negotiations went poorly. But things don't work out right. Someone panics and shoots the person who opens the door. Less dominant werewolves would have a tendency to panic when invading an alpha's home. Suppose they shoot him several times, a mistake, but not irreparable. Except that then, Adam attacks. So they shoot Adam, too, and chain him so they can hold him until he listens. But Mac dies, and Adam is not in any mood to listen. He begins to break free. And when you have enough drug in him to stop that, he is too far under to discuss anything. They are panicking. They have to come up with a new plan. How can they get Adam to cooperate? Jesse's upstairs, I said, snapping my fingers in a quick rhythm that answered the speed of my thoughts. Take Jesse, then force Adam to listen. Or if he won't listen, then threaten to kill Jesse. It made as much sense as anything else. So where did Mac and the drug experiments come in? I scrabbled out of the bug and jogged into my office to locate a notebook. I had no proof of any of it, just instincts, but my instincts were sometimes very good. On one page I wrote down, drug experiments, buying new werewolves, and on the next, why replace Bran with Adam? I set a hip over a 3-legged stool and tapped my pen on the paper. Other than the tranquilizers that had killed Mac, there was no physical evidence of any other drugs, but Mac's experiences seemed to indicate there were more. After a moment, I wrote down, were ketamine, silver nitrate, DMSO the only drugs? Then I wrote down the names of people likely to have knowledge of all the drugs. Samuel, Dr. Wallace, and after a thoughtful pause, I wrote, Aurieli, the chemistry teacher. With a sigh, I admitted, it could be anybody. Then, stubbornly, I circled Dr. Wallace's name. He had the ability and a motive for making a tranquilizer that would render him harmless to the people he loved. I quit playing with my pen. Or would it? Wasn't the vampire's kiss a tranquilizer?
It was possible a submissive werewolf might have come out of it like any other tranquilized animal, groggy and quiet. Stefan had said that only some wolves become problematic. Samuel had come out fighting with his wolf ready to attack just as if he'd been trapped. I thought of the broken manacles Adam had left behind in his house. He'd put his reaction down to Jesse's kidnapping, but maybe that was only part of it. But that was a side issue for now. I looked at the second page. Why replace Bran with Adam? I brushed my finger over the words. I wasn't certain that was the motive, but it was the kind of motive that would leave bodies on the ground without discouraging the perpetrators. They left Adam alive when they could easily have killed him, so they wanted something from him. Bran had been Marok for almost 2 centuries. Why would someone get desperate to change the way things ran just now? I wrote down, "Want change." Bran could be a bastard. He was a ruler in the old-fashioned despot sense, but that was something the werewolves seemed to want. Under his rule, the werewolves in North America had prospered, both in power and numbers, while in Europe, the wolves waned. But would Adam be any different? Well, yes, but not in any way that I could see would benefit anyone. If anything, Adam would be more despotic. Samuel said that Bran had considered using Adam as the poster child for the werewolves, but it would never have worked. Adam was too hot-tempered. Some reporter would shove a camera in his face and find himself flattened on the pavement. That was it. I sucked in my breath. It wasn't change that someone wanted. It was to keep everything the same. Bran was planning on bringing the wolves out. Suddenly, it didn't seem so odd that one of Adam's wolves might have betrayed him. I wasn't as confident that my instincts were right as everyone else seemed to be. But I could see how one of Adam's wolves could feel that aiding the enemy had not been a betrayal. They were preparing the way for him to take power. No harm was supposed to have come from their raid on Adam's house, but they wouldn't be discouraged by the deaths there. Werewolves die, and their wolves had died for a cause. A wolf like Mac, who wasn't even pack, wouldn't be a great loss when measured by what was at risk. The betrayer could be anyone. None of Adam's pack had any personal loyalty to Bran. I took out the card Bran had given me and called the top number. He picked up on the second ring. "Bran, this is Mercy." Now that I had him on the phone, I wasn't certain how much to tell him. Far too much of what I'd put together was pure speculation. Finally, I asked, "Have you heard from Adam?"
"No."
I tapped my toe. Is Dr. Wallace still there?" Bran sighed.
"Yes."
"Could you ask him if he developed a tranquilizer that works on werewolves?" His voice sharpened.
"What do you know?"
"Nothing. Not a damn thing, including where Adam and your son are right now. Just when are you considering bringing the werewolves out in public?"
"Samuel's missing?"
"I wouldn't go that far. The whole pack is with them. They just haven't bothered to check in with me."
"Good," he said, obviously not surprised that they hadn't seen fit to keep me updated. "In answer to your previous question, I believe it is something that must be done soon. Not this week nor next, but not a year from now either. My contacts in the FBI laboratories tell me that our existence is an all but open secret right now. Like the Grey Lords, I've come to the conclusion that since coming out is inevitable, it is imperative to control how it is done."
See? Werewolves are control freaks. How many wolves know about this?" I asked. There was a pause.
"This is pertinent to the attack on Adam?"
"I believe so, yes."
"Most of the wolves here would know," he said. "I haven't been keeping it a secret. Next month at the conclave, I am going to make a general announcement."
He didn't say anything more, just waited for me to tell him what I'd been thinking. It was pure speculation, and I was opening myself up to ridicule by saying anything at all. I sat on that stool and realized that I had my loyalties, too. I was not a werewolf, but Bran was still my Marok. I had to warn him. "I have no proof," I told him, "just a theory." And I told him what I thought had happened, and why. "I don't have any idea who it is," I told the silence at the other end of the line, "or if I'm right."
"If it is a werewolf who is unhappy about revealing himself to humans,
It seems odd that there would be humans working with him, Brand said. But he didn't say it like he thought my theory was stupid.
I'd almost forgotten about the humans.
Right, and I don't have much of an explanation about the drug tests that Mac told us about either, other than maybe they were worried about dosage or side effects. Paying for a new-made werewolf seems like a lot of risk with very little benefit.
When two wolves are fighting, having one of them drugged could greatly influence the outcome, said Bran.
I like your theory, Mercedes. It isn't perfect, but it feels like you're on the right trail.
He wouldn't have to worry about the loyalty of humans, I said, thinking out loud.
Who?
Adam says that one of the wolves who attacked his house was someone he knew, a wolf who shared his rebirth.
David Christensen.
Yes. It didn't surprise me that the Maroc would know who I was talking about. Bran managed to give the impression that he knew every werewolf anywhere personally. Maybe he did.
David works with humans, Bran said slowly, but not with other werewolves. I wouldn't have thought he would ever be a part of a plot that included rape. Changes like that experienced by your Alan Mackenzie Fraser. Still, it is something to consider. I'll call Charles and see what he makes of it.
He's still in Chicago?
Yes, you were right. It was Leo. Apparently his salary wasn't enough to support the kind of living he wanted to enjoy.
Bran's voice sounded neutral.
He didn't know the wolf he sold the young victims like your Alan Mackenzie Fraser to. There were six of them altogether. He didn't know what they wanted the young ones for, either. Stupid of him. The Alpha Second is the one who set up the deal, but Charles is having difficulty getting any more information out of the Second because he has left town. It may take us a while to find him. The rest of the pack seems to have been unaware of what was going on, but we are breaking them up anyway.
Bran, if you hear from Samuel or Adam, will you tell them to call me?
I'll do that,
he said gently, and hung up. Chapter 13. I was in no mood for working on the beetle after talking to Bran, so I closed up shop and went home. Bran had thought my ideas had merit, which was all well and good, except it did not answer the tightness in my belly that told me I should have gotten a call by now. My nose had told me that Adam hadn't found Jesse at the empty house in West Richland, but it didn't tell me where they'd gone afterward. I paused again on my porch at the smell of death that still lingered there. I decided Elizaveta Arkadyevna was punishing me for not telling her what was going on. I'd have to clean the porch myself, or be reminded of Mac's death every time I walked in my house for the next few months. I opened the door, still thinking of Mac, and realized what else my senses had been trying to tell me a moment too late. All I had time to do was drop my chin, so that the man who'd been standing behind the door didn't get the chokehold he'd gone after, but his arm was still tight around my head and neck. I twisted around sharply in his grip until I faced him, then threw everything I had into a short, sharp punch into the nerve center on the outside of the big muscle of his thigh. He swore, his grip loosened, and I pulled free and started fighting in earnest. My style of karate, Shisei Kaikan, was designed for soldiers who would be encountering multiple opponents, which was good, because there were three men in my living room. One of them was a werewolf, in human form. I didn't have time to think, only react. I got in some good hits, but it rapidly became apparent that these men had studied violence a lot longer than I. About the time I realized the only reason I was still up and fighting was because they were being very careful not to hurt me, the werewolf hit me once, hard, square in my diaphragm, then, while I was gasping for air, tossed me on the floor and pinned me there.
Broke my f-
Ladies present, chided the man who held me in an implacable grip that was as gentle as a mother holding her babe. His voice had the same soft drawl that sometimes touched Adam's voice. No swearin'.
Broke my freakin' nose, then, said the first voice dryly,
if somewhat muffled, presumably by the broken nose.
It'll heal.
He ignored my attempts to wriggle out of his hold. Anyone else hurt?
She bit John Julian, said the first man again.
Lovnip, sir, I'm fine. He cleared his throat. Sorry, sir. It never occurred to me that she'd have training. I wasn't ready.
It's water under the bridge now. Learn from it, boy, my captor said.
Then he leaned down, and in a voice of power that vibrated down my spine, said,
Let us chat a little,
The idea is not to hurt you. If you hadn't struggled, you wouldn't even have the bruises you do now. We could have hurt you much worse if we had wanted to.
I knew he was right, but it didn't make him my best friend.
What do you want? I asked in as reasonable a tone as I could manage, flattened as I was on the floor beneath a strange werewolf.
That's my girl, he approved while I stared at the floor between my couch and end table, about 2 feet from my left hand,
where Z's dagger must have fallen when I went to sleep last night.
We're not here to hurt you, he told me. That's the first thing you need to know. The second is that the werewolves who have been watching your house and the Sarges have been called off, so there's no one to help you. The third is...
He stopped speaking and bent his head to take a deeper breath.
Are you a were? Not a werewolf. You don't smell right for that. I thought it might just be the cat. Never had a cat. But it's you that smells like fur and the hunt.
Grandpa?
It's all right, the werewolf answered. She's not going to hurt me. What are you, girl?
Does it matter?
I asked. He'd called Adam Sarge, as in sergeant?
No, he said. He lifted his weight off me and released me. Not in the slightest.
I rolled toward the couch and grabbed the dagger, shaking it free of sheath and belt. One of the intruders started forward, but the werewolf held up a hand, and the other man stopped. I kept moving until I was crouched on the back of the couch, the dagger in my hand and my back to the wall. The werewolf's skin was so dark, the highlights were blue and purple rather than brown. He knelt on the floor where he'd moved as soon as he let me up. He wore loose khaki pants and a light blue shirt. At another gesture, the two men backed up farther,